your next great vacation might be something you've never even considered. A private yacht in a beautiful location just for you and your closest friends and family. Explore the beaches of the Virgin Islands, the ancient shores of Greece, or the tropical paradise of Tahiti. This is not a cruise. This is a yacht charter vacation with The Moorings. And it's easier than you think. With hundreds of award-winning yachts to choose from, located in over 20 beautiful sailing destinations, the world is in your hands. Whether you're an experienced boater or looking for a more genuine once-in-a-lifetime vacation, The Moorings can make your dream a reality. Call us today and start your journey to your next great escape. Your private yacht awaits at moorings.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We are almost at the finish line of the G1 climax. Here we are, live and free today on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. John Pollock here, checking in with Karen Peterson, who has just finished her orientation sprint over the last 3 weeks. And here she is, arriving for the final weekend. You know, Karen is kind of like our star player that's coming in for the final two nights of the G1. We're bringing out the heavy hitters tonight with myself. And then tomorrow, Karen will be with Bruce Lord and W.H. Park for the finals. But how are you, Karen?
I kind of feel like Taguchi making my comeback after being gone for a very long time.
Yes.
I'm a little exhausted, a little brain dead, but I am glad to be back. I'm glad to wrap up the tournament that started my entire New Japan wrestling journey for me in 2017 with you. So
yourself and Ghetto, obviously not in any kind of alignment here, because
absolutely not.
The G1 coincides with your busiest time work wise. So how, like, you have been checking in with several shows that you have been doing, but how has your G1 viewing been over the last month? Has it been scattered? How are you doing G1 wise in the deep waters?
Full disclosure, I've only watched the shows of the ones I've had to review up until today, just because I had no brain capacity for anything else other than get home from work, debrief, not think. I put Game of Thrones on just because I've already seen it all. With wrestling, like something like this, I have to focus. So it was the, after we get off this recording today, I'm going to kind of like speed run all the recommended matches and then get prepared for tomorrow with WH and Bruce.
Well, I am sure WH Park is going to be coming locked and loaded with his takes on this year's G1. So you can look out for that.
He always does.
So we'll mention that off the top that this is a free show for everybody. If you want to catch the final night or catch up on all of our G1 podcasts, join at any level at postwrestlingcafe.com. And the final show will be coming out Sunday evening for everybody with Bruce, WH, and of course, Karen Peterson. So you can look forward to that on Sunday. But we are diving into today's first of two shows at Ryogoku Kokugeekin. And obviously there's
going to
be how was that, Karen?
Well done.
All right. I have certainly been trying to push the Marigold.
It's Marigold.
Marigold.
It's so
Marigold.
Hard to remember.
A classic moment in pro wrestling history on Post Wrestling. But today's attendance, Karen, 5,340. Now, to compare to the semifinals a year ago, which featured Tetsuya Naito against Will Ospreay and Kazuchika Okada versus Evil, that drew 6,579. So down about 1,200 from last year. It was interesting to hear Chris Charlton in the opening match note the fact that there are a small amount of tickets left for tomorrow's show, but it's going to be a tough ticket to get for Sunday. So I don't know if that is optimism on New Japan's side or just the fact that maybe it is going to be a very well attended show. How would you assess that attendance? Like, it does feel this was a rebuilding year for New Japan. And does this attendance figure kind of show you that?
Given that they've lost big names in the last year, which include Okada and Ospreay, who are two of the most notable names in the G1 for the last several years, and they've still been able to pull relatively decent numbers, I'd say for a rebuilding year, it's quite good. Would I have loved to see it match up like last year's numbers? No problem, of course. But I, you know, that's not really realistic. I do enjoy my tempered expectations. It's one of those things where this G1, it's in a hard place only because it overlaps with so many other wrestling tournaments that are happening concurrently at the same time. The Tokyo Joshi Princess Cup is going on. Stardom's 5-Star Grand Prix is going on. NOAH's N1 Victory is going on. So it's like you have a lot of wrestling fans from all over the country, but they're all having to pick and choose which shows they show up for. So given that there's so much competition within the country domestically right now, I'd say it's a decent number, honestly.
It's hard to give like a relative comparison because those fall G1s that they like, that was so much in the pandemic era, but just all things being equal, do you have a preference of like the time of the year that the G1 is best suited for? Like tradition is the summer, but is the fall more optimal and closer to the Tokyo Dome? Do you have a preference?
I mean, the selfish part of me wishes it was still in the fall because I would actually be able to watch more of it. I understand that they're the whole, like, it's the, you know, the way to cap off the strongest man of the summer, which is when their tradition for so many years of having the G1, you know, 34 years of the G1 at this point. So it's just like, personally, I'd rather wait because, you know, in Japan, August is an abysmal month for weather. If you've never been to Japan in August, if you think peak Florida, like 95% humidity, 95 degrees outside, it is sweltering, it is hot. And a lot of buildings are not well air conditioned. And you know how W.H. Park feels about his air conditioning in the summertime.
Yeah, he's only mentioned the heat inside Sumo Hall for the final night of a G1 one, two, or 1,000 times. Yes.
1 or 2,000 times.
Yeah, that's it. It's very hot in Sumo Hall to the point that I will never attend a G1 at Sumo Hall in August based on his warnings.
Exactly. I would rather go to the opening weekend in Osaka at Osaka Jo Hall or, you know, the Edeon Arena because I know the air conditioning in those buildings. As much as I want to see a G1 final at Ryogoku Sumo Hall, I passed out when I was teaching class in Japan one time in August because it was so humid and hot and the air conditioning wasn't turned on yet. Because they have a concept of cool biz where it has to be a certain temperature before they can turn on the air cooling in public schools. So,
dear.
Yes.
This so is like Waiting's car that has been without air conditioning also.
Yeah. I don't know how y'all do it. Like, you have a Viking funeral for a car in Florida if the air conditioning goes out in the summertime.
Well, thankfully, we're not Tokyo. We're not like Las Vegas, Tokyo levels, but it does get pretty hot here in Toronto. As I speak to the person in Florida, as we speak. Karen, how much of the undercard did you get to go through on today's show?
I watched the whole thing.
Okay. I
slept in and woke up around 6:15 to catch Zack Sabre Jr. versus Shingo Takagi. And then once the archive went up, I went back and started from the beginning and watched the entire card. So,
okay, well, we can go right in order then, because the undercard, this was not a throwaway undercard. They built a lot of things. There were teases of title matches, interactions. Gabe Kidd and Jake Lee are now blood brothers, coming out of this. I mean, just total besties. But we start off with Mikey Nichols and Robbie Eagles taking on Yoshihashi and Shoma Kato. And, this is where, they're working on Kato in the corner. Kato is clearly being influenced by Muhammad Yone's hair that he is growing out to, just epic proportions here. Kato got a lot of shine here, including a Boston Crab onto Eagles, and he will not break the hold. Even as Nichols is delivering all of these strikes, Eagles finally breaks free and Shoma Kato gets his big schoolboy roll up. And this crowd like gasped that they thought they were going to see, Mikey Nichols eat a fall here, but he kicked out by Eagles. And then Eagles hits the turbo backpack, pinning Kato in 9 minutes and 27 seconds. One other line I enjoyed about this was Walker Stewart stating, you know, Yoshihashi felt like one of those spots could have been his, and man, maybe he could have been in the semifinals of the G1 tonight. And Chris Charlton just threw a wet blanket on this saying, yeah, you know, he was in the play-in tournament and he lost. So, doesn't really have too much of a case for being a semifinalist. But the opening match, this to me was more about just a bit of a spotlight on Shoma Kato.
It's one of those things where we're at that stage where they're starting to, you know, they've established the Reiwa 4, Reiwa 3, whatever you want to call them at this point. And now they're trying to focus more on the young lions now that the road to the Tokyo Dome is getting set up. They're like, we have all these guys. It's time to start, you know, saturating the opening matches and undercard with them, which is good because I still, because I haven't watched New Japan regularly as of due to work, I'm still not familiar with which young lions. I can't remember all their full names. And yes, I know that that is problematic for someone covering New Japan, but it's just like, I haven't had any time. And my hot take on Yoshihashi not being in the G1, I would rather have him in the G1 wrestling like Goto's been wrestling instead of having to sit through evil matches. Full stop. Not
a hot take at all when it comes to evil. I'm sure we will talk about evil. We had the Full House of Torture experience on this show. Next up was Hirooki Goto. I think you'll be watching a lot of his matches over the next 24 hours, Karen, from a great tournament, I thought, from Goto, teaming with Tomoaki Honma against Gabe Kidd and Jake Lee, who they've really attached at the hip as, you know, the War Dogs teammates. They come out, they have their pre-match drink now, which has become a ritual, and I think clearly aiming these two for a tag title run. They push the fact they have never lost a tag match together and really seem to be setting them up to challenge Haste and Nichols and probably have a tag league run as well later this year. Gabe Kidd had a great tournament. Jake Lee, not so much, although I would say the back half was, you know, he did start to show some signs, and I think a tag is probably the best direction for him. We'll see if it is for Kidd, because I just see the sky is the limit for Gabe Kidd. I can see a lot of interest in Gabe Kidd from all the major companies. He has really stood out just this year as a whole, but this tournament, I think, was a big spotlight for him.
I think one of the things about Gabe Kidd, it all depends on how long they plan on keeping him as the New Japan Strong Openweight Champion. I think with the loss of Alex Coughlin having to retire, Jake Lee would make a great tag team partner for him moving towards World Tag League. But I also don't want Gabe going into the tag league as a champion. Unless they're tag champions, I don't want him to have a belt. And then Goto, yes, like of the shows that I have done, I have been singing the praises of Hirooki Goto as the senior statesman of the G1. I am looking forward to seeing a lot of his matches. But again, it was short and sweet and what it needed to be, just to kind of, and I feel like we're gonna have more of these matches on tomorrow's card as well, which they haven't announced yet, but I enjoyed it. It was 8 minutes, didn't overstay its welcome. It's a good time.
Kid at one point looks into the camera stating he is very drunk right now. So as much as we get all the comparisons to Steve Austin, this was a bit more Sandman influence of Gabe Kidd. Yeah. And then, after the FBS to Honma is stopped, Honma fires out of the corner with a Kokeshi, and then on a second try hits the FBS, pinning Honma at 7:43. And this was essentially just to set up Kidd and Lee for a bit of a tag run coming out of this. He gave the middle fingers to Goto. Fine undercard match. Nothing that's going to blow your socks off, but there you have it. That was your second match of the show. Konosuke Takeshita, who I thought, he came out, this crowd saw him as a star. Like, you could just see the reaction. This guy stood out as the performer of the tournament and really just felt like he had that aura here with this audience after this past month. Teaming with Jeff Cobb and Callum Newman against Shota Umino, El Phantasmo, and Jado, with Jado and Phantasmo on the same page, although we would get some miscommunication here. Takeshita is still selling his knee from the tournament. Phantasmo and Jado, they double-team Takeshita. The Green Killer gets stopped, and then Jado is shoved into Phantasmo, and the miscommunication leads to Takeshita with the big forearm smash that he's been using, getting the pin on Jado in 8:34. Phantasmo is frustrated. Umino plays Peacemaker, and Umino also had some words with television champion Jeff Cobb, so maybe a direction following the G1.
It's another one that's one of these matches where it's starting to take what's been happening in the tournament and starting to give it direction for what's going to happen after tomorrow. I am glad that Umino has extended his hand to ELP, because I need ELP to get out of his emo boy phase. I need him to either be happy like he was with Hikuleo, or I need him to go be a troublemaker with the War Dogs. Those are the two options at this point. I need him to pick something that's not I'm the jilted lover in a breakup. That's what it is. But Takeshita, the matches I have seen of his in the G1, I've absolutely loved. I know he's an AEW guy. I know they're going to keep him in AEW, but I would really like to see him more in New Japan more frequently.
I think that's the catch-22 of Takeshita. Like, he just killed it in this tournament, that this audience, they want to see him have more of a presence in New Japan. I would say as well, like, I'm continually feeling like El Phantasmo has such an upside. He was excellent in this tournament as well, maybe a bit understated compared to others, but this guy has a big run in him as a babyface or a heel. And I think that there is definitely that opening for him, and we'll see if they see that elevation in him down the road. Then it was our 10-man tag with President Tanahashi, Toru Yano, Oleg Bolton, Tiger Mask, and Karen's favorite, Ryusuke Taguchi, taking on Karen's not-so-favorites of Evil, Ren Narita, Sho, Yoshinobu Kanemaru. And Karen, you know we can't complete a G1 without Yujiro with his big
John Pollock's favorite wrestler, Yujiro Takahashi.
looked like the man just woke up out of bed, put on his worst t-shirt for Sumo Hall of all places, just looked like garbage, and lived up to it here in this match. The House of Torture, they just pounce on Tanahashi. The man's still in his robe, this beautiful, probably five-figure robe that they're just destroying. Taguchi gets the tag, multiple hip attacks, and they mention it is Dick Togo's 55th birthday. And Evil is choking Tanahashi with a chair, uses the tag rope onto Tiger Mask. And Charlton notes that Ren Narita, he's been injected with brain worms by House of Torture. So he is like the RFK Jr. of the House of Torture.
Oh, Lord.
Bolton is tagged, and this crowd, they are so into Oleg Bolton. And the tease for this Bolton shake, when they stop it and cut it off, there's all these boos. But then he grabs hold of Narita, and when he hits the Bolton shake, like, this move is over. This guy is over. I mean, this guy has done an enormous improvement over this G1. I think he's been one of the really solid stories coming out of this year's tournament. They manage to get a 5-on-1 on Yano, hit the dick punch as Walker Stewart is just appalled at this. No, not in Rio Goku. Anywhere but here. And Tanahashi ducks the whiskey shot by Kanemaru, but Kanemaru faints him out, and Tanahashi gets outsmarted and takes the whiskey in the eyes. Everything is Evil is delivered to Yano, and Evil pins Yano. 9:37, and they are continuing to destroy Hantai until Shota Umino and El Fantasmo / Logan Paul run in to clear the ring.
Oh, why is this match almost 10 minutes?
Minute per person. They all had to get their shine in this one. But this
As much as I have missed Taguchi and Grumpy Tiger Mask, it's the what I like. My biggest beef with Ghetto is how much House of Torture we have to deal with. I need my boys liberated. I need Sho and Ren Narita out of there. So I need something. I just can't anymore. I'm tired.
So, Karen, when it comes to, like, buying futures on talents in New Japan, you bought in early on Sho. We all know that.
I did.
And you were, I think, you know, myself and you were in on Ren Narita.
Yeah.
Have you sold your stock on your futures at this point for either guy, or are you holding on? Do you believe that there is, there is that rainbow that they will eventually reach to?
My toxic trait is I still believe in them. I still believe there's an upside. I just need them to get out of House of Torture. If they're going to be heels, I would rather them work with guys like Kenta and Ishimori, who tend to actually do wrestling. They do have heel tactics from time to time, but they tend to actually use all of their skill set, which includes a lot of wrestling. I just feel like their talent is wasted. Or, you know, put them with Finley and the War Dogs, because again, yes, they're obnoxious, but they also do a lot of their own wrestling. I just feel like if they're happy collecting their paychecks at this point, sure, but House of Torture has an embarrassment of riches in the wrestling department, and minus Dick Togo and Yujiro Takahashi, and none of them use it anymore. Evil is a really solid wrestler. He doesn't really use it. Maybe get like a good 2 minutes out of a 20-minute match with him. Kanemaru is a great wrestler. You barely see it out of him too, unless he has to carry the whole entire group. I want to believe that deep down there somewhere that they're going to have a face turn. I just don't know how many more years I have to sit through House of Torture before I see it.
Yeah, well, I think Ren Narita, Sho, they are falling, you know, into the Yujiro House of T-shirt abyss that is very, very hard to come out of once you are slotted into the T-shirt division of House of Torture. Doki. Yeah. Taichi and Taka Michinoku against Clark Connors, Drilla Maloney, and Taiji Ishimori. And early on, they're promoting Hiromu's match coming up with Mustafa Ali at Capital Collision. And we'll go over that card at the end, because this Capital Collision card looks excellent on paper. They got the heat on Doki in the War Dogs corner. Drilla Maloney's tan was, I think this guy had been on the beaches in Florida and just didn't leave. He was like, This guy had gone into a microwave. And
he's roasted. I don't.
Dude, this is like Hogan 87.
Like Publix rotisserie chicken. Like he's. I've never seen a man that tan.
This was insane. I was like transfixed by how tanned he was here. I mean, this was just insanity for an undercard tag. Doki avoids the Drilla Killer that they're very much trying to make as like the most devastating move in New Japan at the moment. Ishimori and Taichi go into a sumo stance and Taichi puts him down. This gets a big pop in sumo hall. And then Doki stops the bone lock. Michinoku driver is stopped. La Mystica into the bone lock. Ishimori taps out Taka in 8 minutes, 3 seconds. And it seemed to be Doki and Taiji Ishimori that they were dangling for your next junior heavyweight title program.
I do love that both Taichi and Ishimori did their little sumo off in sumo hall because both of them are very big fans of sumo and regularly go to sumo shows. So it was just like, it was one of those, like, had like extra layer to the match. But yes, Doki versus Ishimori. Yes, please give me more and give them time to have a good match. I feel like had Uemura not been injured and had he not been in the conversation for the finals or the semifinals, I feel like he would have been the sixth man in this match. But yeah, it's, I'm glad to see that they're bringing the juniors back because Super Junior Tag League is also coming up in the fall. But it, again, less than 10 minutes, didn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah, this fall will be interesting as well with Doki. It was like he won the title after Desperado's injury and, you know, he's been on pause all summer. So we're going to kind of get to see Doki in this junior heavyweight title role as champion going into, you know, the fall shows.
Your next great vacation might be something you've never even considered. A private yacht in a beautiful location just for you and your closest friends and family. Explore the beaches of the Virgin Islands, the ancient shores of Greece, or the tropical paradise of Tahiti. This is not a cruise. This is a yacht charter vacation with The Moorings. And it's easier than you think. With hundreds of award-winning yachts to choose from, located in over 20 beautiful sailing destinations, the world is in your hands. Whether you're an experienced boater or looking for a more genuine once-in-a-lifetime vacation, The Moorings can make your dream a reality. Call us today and start your journey to your next great escape. Your private yacht awaits at moorings.com. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown. Ooh. And your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Then, right before we go to the semifinals, the last undercard tag pits Tetsuya Naito, Hiromu Takahashi, and Bushi against Hanare, Great O'Khan, and Callum Newman. And Okan does his big sitting spot on top of Naito that gets over every time. Hanare is in with Hiromu, and Bushi delivers his Bushi rocket to Hanare on the floor. Hanare lands a shot to the body, spinning wheel kick, and then a knee into the corner on Bushi. And Okan subdues Naito with a knee bar as Hanare submits Bushi with Ultima in 9 minutes, 8 seconds. And the big angle here was Okan, who beat Naito to eliminate him in the round robin stage, holding up the IWGP title and really suggests that Great Okan is going to sneak away with a title shot on one of these shows coming up.
I think it's one of those things where, you know, Naito has a couple of losses in this G1. So
he's got like five different opponents that he
so his dance
this.
Card is going to be packed for the road to Wrestle Kingdom. But I'm also wondering if, depending on how many shows there are between now and then, if he may have to defend one of those on a US show, or if they do any, because I know Capital Collision happens at the end of this month, but if there's another show between now and Wrestle Kingdom that's abroad, if he remains champion, it is possible that he could not just only defend in Japan. But
how many title matches could you see Naito having? Like King of Pro Wrestling, I would say, is a given. And then you've got
what's the remainder of the
so
dance
you've got,
card
you've got
for
Destruction
this year?
In Kobe.
And he'll probably defend there.
There's King of Pro Wrestling. There's That's Power two. Struggle. There's and you three. Could throw a US show. Can Naito withstand 3 to 4 singles matches before the Tokyo Dome? I have serious concerns after this year's tournament.
Well, we all do. I think this is literally his knee's last ride. And they're not going to, I seriously doubt they're not going to not have him be champion walking into the dome, because he is arguably one of their biggest.
Oh, it was clear. Sellers. Like, this guy got one of the biggest reactions on the show. Like, he is still to the audience, like, their big star. And you've got to protect the star, at least until the dome show.
So if he has to do, I think if they're smart, they'll give him maybe 3 defenses. But if they want to hold up to the you have to defend every loss, I just don't know. Or we're just like, I would rather have quality defenses over quantity of defenses, if that makes sense. And also it all depends on if they are gonna have him sit out World Tag League, or if they're gonna have him wrestle during World Tag League.
Oh, please give him December off. Just let him heal for December. Get him ready for January 4th. And you can also be strategic about it. Like, if Zach loses on Sunday and he somehow gets a match, like, you can work a Zack Sabre Jr. match, and that can, you know, you can do a Zack Sabre Jr. match. It's quite different from doing, say, a match with, say, a Shingo Takagi, for instance, where I think the demand is going to be so much higher to do that style of match as well. So it's going to be very interesting, I think, to see Naito's handling a year out, not to be too doom and gloom, but has Naito had his last G1?
If Tanahashi stepped down this year, it would not surprise me if Naito would be the one to sit out next year. Mm-hmm. If he still chooses not to retire next year. It all depends on what Naito wants to do after January 4th, 2025. I don't think he needs to win another G1. I don't think he needs to be in another G1. If he wants to be in a G1, he can do undercards. He can do commentary. He can show up at every show and do what Hiromu did when he was injured and just show up and like open the show if he really feels the need to say and do things. But if the focus moving forward is also supposed to be on the younger generation, then they're the ones that need to be in the G1. Like, as much as it pained me to see a G1 without Kenta and Tanahashi and like Ishii and a lot of the guys that made me want to watch the G1, they can't rely on Naito to be the one guy to shoulder as like with him and Goto. I would rather have Naito sit out, and this is gonna be a hot take, I'd rather have Ishii or Yoshihashi in his place, because they don't need to win, and they're probably not going to win, but they can consistently work the level of matches and seemingly have less pressing injuries that are on a time clock.
Well, that's what Wei and I spoke about the other day, was that, you know, whether it was intentional, you cannot tell me that they expected Goto to get over to this degree, because so much of the focus, this was the total youth movement. And naturally, your audience is going to have a sentimental attachment to the old guard. And I think Goto kind of backed his way into that role. And that's a role you can have every year. And it doesn't have to be Goto next year. Ishii can be slotted in there, and he's your one guy that is trying to turn back the clock. And you, I'm very confident Ishii will be able to do this G1 till the man's 70. And he's someone you could use next year in that same Goto role that you saw this year. It's a valuable role to have when it's so youth oriented as well. So I think you could do that.
And that's the hard thing, is that as much as we want to see all of our favorites or all our longtime favorites in a tournament like this, it's becoming very clear and very quickly that people's bodies are breaking down. And if you want to be able to still enjoy seeing them on any wrestling, maybe they sit out a tournament. Maybe they just work the undercard. Maybe they just do commentary, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's like 9 hard matches with the way the format is this year. Like, it's a big ask for a tournament that has this high bar for, you know, what the audience expects now that this generation has kind of placed it upon on this pedestal. Into our semifinals. And first up, it is the battle to see who will represent the B block in Sunday's final. David Finlay against Yota Tsuji. And Finlay starts this match off with all these big strikes. He's grinding his elbow into the face. It's all Finlay at the beginning. They're talking about how this man was essentially born into this industry, working on the ring crew under his dad in WWE when he was 12 years old. Tenzan babysitting him in the back when his dad would come out to wrestle, probably teaching him in an anaconda vice before he could even get his first words out. And Finlay then pulls out 2 tables and sets them next to one another. And we just watched these 2 tables as something awful was going to happen. Tsuji super kicks Finlay off the apron and then lands a tope suicida, and Finlay flies over the guardrail. And Chris Charlton explains that the G1, it's not just demanding in comparison to other sports, but also humanity with what they have endured. So this is up there with the most intense physical feats accomplished by normal human beings on a daily basis, not just in sports, and also brings up Tsuji's Mexican experience on his excursion as a secret to his success as well. So Tsuji teases a stomp off the edge onto the table, but Finlay avoids as the crowd is just in awe, just waiting for these tables for someone to get dismembered. Finlay then goes for a spear at Tsuji to try and hit him with his own gene blaster, and Tsuji rocks him with this knee strike, huge near fall, and follows with a one-man Spanish fly, hits the raging fire of Takeshita's, and then the curb stomp, huge sequence from Tsuji as he is mounting his comeback. Finlay then eyes the tables and he goes for a powerbomb, but is stopped with a counter by Tsuji with a Rana. And onto the edge they go. Finlay gets back body dropped, powerbombs Yota Tsuji from the floor onto the 2 tables. Now one table breaks, the other, you just see Suji's head bounce off this second table. And Chris Charlton is saying he's got a concussion. He's definitely got a concussion. And man, dude, this guy's head just rocked off of this chair. Off of this second table. Man, we did not need the second table here. This was just,
no.
Oh God, man.
It's one of those, for those who have heard any of my commentary on the Japanese tables, had they done something from the apron down through the table, whether it's like a body splash off the ropes, a power bomb, sure. But there's like probably like an inch, it's not like solid, but there's like an inch thick support bar underneath those tables. So there's no give. So if the second table was like, the frame was dented, as they said on commentary, I'm very concerned about Tsuji's neck and head, because his head probably bounced off of it. And
this was the nastiest spot of the match.
It's not like our plywood tables that you see at most shows internationally that, you know, you sneeze on them and they just like fall apart. This is like you have the plywood or the, you know, it's like probably about an inch thick or like three, four centimeters. And then you have the frame. So it doesn't have much give, if any. Like, it takes a lot of force. So as soon as the tables got set up, I started sweating. And then when that move happened, I was like, can we just not do this and have them wrestle for another like 10 minutes after it, please?
Well, you would think that while he was on the ring crew, Finley's dad might have warned him about table spots gone awry, which fit Finlay, temporarily ended the man's career in WCW. But I mean, what this did lead to was a very believable count out tease, because Tsuji collapses on the floor and he just makes it in at 19. And so Tsuji is fighting back and he immediately is hit with Into Oblivion. Finley gives the middle fingers to the crowd, and Tsuji just collapses trying to deliver a lariat, and he's really selling the effects of this table spot. There is a buckle bomb. There's a power bomb. Then a pair of buckle bombs. Tsuji, on the final power bomb, counters, hooks the leg, kicks out, then the Jean Blaster, but he cannot capitalize. It's a delayed cover, and thus Finley kicks out. He hits the Marlowe crash, only gets a two count, and then this awesome counter. Jean Blaster into an inside cradle by Finley, only gets two. He blocks the overkill, and then the big spot of the match. Tsuji gets the overhooks, and as an ode to his rival, Yuya Uemura, hits the overhooks, the overhead suplex with the overhooks, and they are right on top of this on commentary, and a follow-up Jean Blaster wins the match for Tsuji at 28 minutes and 6 seconds. I thought this was a fantastic match. I will say, though, this crowd, it does feel like Yota Tsuji, they see him as the next guy. I just didn't feel like this crowd is like that he is their guy that they are living and dying by. I think there's still that gap that he's trying to get to. Maybe he's going to get there in this final match. I thought Fit Finley was unbelievable in this match. I really enjoyed this a lot, and this wouldn't be my match of the tournament, but I thought in particular David Finley just laid out a unbelievable match to get Yota Tsuji to that next level. Like, you could see how this was so designed for Tsuji to be the as strong as he could be going into this final.
The way that Yota Tsuji played my heartstrings like a mandolin by using the underhook Kanuki suplex.
I love that spot.
Because Yuya had to drop out of the tournament. I was like, and then on top of that, David Finley being the big bad, you know, big bad evil guy of the tournament, yet he's crawling over to you, to Yota Tsuji and giving him a moment of sportsmanship after all of that. I was like, well done. I also think he was also concerned about Tsuji's well-being after that table spot.
Dude, that is... Yeah,
it was like, a very gnarly one, you know, not a fan, but the match itself was great. First thing in the morning, it was a lot to take in first thing in the morning. I agree with you with the, they're still trying to figure out who the next guy is. Like, Tsuji is the one with all the momentum right now, especially now that, you know, Uemura had to pull back a bit. If they can keep David Finley, like this, I do all the wrestling. You don't hear ghetto, whatever. Not a lot of shenanigans. David Finley, he could have a really good run with eventually the world championship. I want him to have I want them to do something with this global heavyweight championship that he has. I think how Tsuji wrestles tomorrow will have a significant impact on whether the crowd will start being like, he's the guy, he's the next of the four. He's our next guy. Because as much as I would love to, you know, I was very much team Yuya throughout this, you know, you having to unfortunately drop out. I was like, well, we get the final that Bruce and I were pulling for, but I think that a lot of them are still very wary about who the future of the company is going to be. And from a fan perspective, because they have so many sentimental favorites that they're not seeing the forest for the trees right now. It's just that like we're like the nerds like us are just like, who's it going to be? Who's the guy? Who's the guy? And everyone's just like, we're just here for a good time. We're not here for a long time. So I really enjoyed this match. I would put this on my highly recommended list. I know we only do the recommended for our rankings on reports and stuff like that, but I would put this as, if you're going to watch a handful of matches out of this entire G1, this is one you have to include in it.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I went an extra large coffee, the size up from this. I'm going to give it the sleeve, the cream. No cream. Milk, sugar.
Oh, wow.
We didn't hit XL territory, but I really thought, like, I just thought David Finley was fantastic in this match. I thought Tsuji he was a great baby face, but like, to your point, I think that it is like, New Japan is clearly stating of all the contenders going into this G1 of the next star, this is our guy. This is who we're going with. And the audience, I think, is show us. And they have, and like, this guy has the weight of the world on his shoulder. This is the biggest match of his career by far tomorrow. And yeah, there is so much pressure on this guy to deliver in this role. And we've seen, like, this is the curse of this last generation that has set the bar so high that, you know, in your Tanahashis and Naitos and Okadas, that this generation not only have to equal them, they have to exceed them to show that they are the evolution of what they're following. And that's an enormous pressure for all of these like next generation stars to amass to. And Tsuji is obviously that guy that they are going with. I think he has to win tomorrow, but we will see. We'll talk about the next match. At this early morning, were you doling out ice cream? Where was there a ranking from Karen Peterson?
It's Florida in the summertime. We can have ice cream whenever we want. So this is, for me, it's very much four very robust scoops of my favorite, which is butter pecan, with, you know, a whole two heaping scoops of sprinkles.
Okay. That you would be having this ice cream on one table, not two tables. You wouldn't balance the ice cream between two tables.
I would use I'm not planning on throwing anybody through my ice cream or through the table. So it'll be one sturdy table that I can enjoy at my leisure.
All right. This is the post-wrestling ranking system, the award-winning ranking systems that we have created. On to the main event of the show, Zack Sabre Jr. and Shingo Takagi, who will represent the A-Block against Yota Tsuji. And first of all, we have the dynamic of Zack Sabre Jr. flanked by all of his TMDK mates, minus Shane Haste, and Shingo Takagi out alone, LIJ, sending him out to the wolves by himself. And they go over their history, including meeting in the 16-karat gold tournament for WXW in 09 and Zach winning that one. And then, the other way around, Takagi winning the 16-karat match and Zach beating him in the New Japan Cup. 3-2 all time in Takagi's favor going into this match. So we start off and Takagi is the one doing the magic screw to Zach's neck and working on that. Interesting here is that in Takagi's last match with Great O'Khan, the whole focus of that match was Takagi's right arm being so damaged to affect the pumping bomber, and no effect in this match. Like, that was not a story. I thought that was going to be the whole story of Zach going after this arm, but there wasn't even like a tease of the arm being less than 100%. Chris Charlton also noted the recent retirement of Yoshinari Ogawa, which is going to go down as one of the quietest retirements for an individual in history. No press conference, nothing. I'm done.
Just a tweet.
That's it. I mean, the man, short and simple. Dangerous Driver drops Zach right on his head, and Zach comes back and goes after Takagi's knee, and that would be his big focus. And we have the two exchanging ground cobras. There's a Made in Japan, but upon hitting it, Takagi jams his knee and he can't capitalize. Then as they are trading covers, a Zach Driver is hit out of nowhere, but he can't capitalize. And this is when he gets to his feet and he does the magic screw and a PK follow-up. Zach is now favoring his wrist after the ground cobra. And there is a great transition from a Noshigami attempt into Zach's octopus. And Takagi breaks out of that with a DVD and hits the one-legged pumping bomber as he's selling his knee. And this man is just hopping across the ring to hit this pumping bomber. I mean, this man selling his knee tremendously.
Hobbling bomber.
That's it. The bubbling bomber. Takagi breaks a choke falling backward, but lands right into a triangle and lifts him up for the Last of the Dragon, and Zach kicks out of Last of the Dragon. Walker Stewart and Chris Charlton about had a heart attack combined here of seeing the Last of the Dragon kicked out from, and we get into strikes. This huge sequence, a lariat by Zach. Takagi kicks out at one, Zach Driver, and as he hits the Zach Driver right into a knee bar instead of going for the pin. And Walker has the great line, some dreams are meant to stay dreams, as Takagi taps out at 27 minutes and 38 seconds. Zach punches his ticket to face Yota Tsuji on Sunday.
I cannot express enough how much I need Zack Sabre Jr. doing tomorrow. He's been one of the slowest of slow burns in New Japan. And as much as I would love, you know, to be like, well, we got to push the new generation, Zach has time served. Okay. His transitions are beautiful. I have the man's octopus stretch should be in a museum. Like, hang, you know, as the young kids say, hang it in the Louvre. It's just absolutely beautiful. Like, this match, we feasted. It was a vegan feast of the techers, as you would. But it's very much, again, if you were to cherry pick matches, watch this one. Why? Because neither of them want to give up. Neither, it is like no rest for the wicked, no, for the kingdom of the older men in the tournament. But it was just, it kept me on the edge of my seat. And I woke up this morning when I saw the times on the matches, and I'm like, do we really need these matches to be almost 30 minutes apiece? But you know, given how short the undercard is, it made sense. But
did you go in knowing who was winning before you started?
I glanced at the times. Like, I just kind of like quick scrolled the results, but didn't really like focus, because again, it was 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
But I was just like, when I saw 25:05 for Finley versus Tsuji, I was like, all right, I can't. That's the other problem with the new version of New Japan. You used to be able to scroll during the live stream to go back to the very beginning. Yeah. And you can't do that anymore. So if you come into the show late, like I tend to do because I like sleep, I have to wait until the archive goes up before.
Yeah, you can't rewind. I can't fathom how you can't rewind.
Because they do match chapters now, which I mean is great if you're looking for singular matches, but if you're trying to watch the live stream, you have to wait till it's a whole thing. But I woke up and I was like, all right, well, I'll bleary eye watch Takagi versus Zach because of the entire card. No disrespect to Finley versus Tsuji. This was the match I was waiting for when the semifinals were announced. But yeah, it was a great match. But also with as much as they did in this match, I'm very curious to see how much the wear and tear from these two tournament semifinals are going to play into tomorrow, because when Tsuji comes out, he kind of hobbles a bit. Like he looks tired. Everybody looks tired after this match.
Well, Yota Tsuji's outfit did not look tired. This man was just styling when he came out here. But these two matches were
lovely.
these two matches were just phenomenal. I'm going like I had these two really on par with one another. XL milk sugar sleeve doled out here for myself. I thought these were just, we had a 28:06 and 27:38. So, I mean, these were like within 30 seconds of each other. This was just, if you're going to sit down, this is an hour of incredible wrestling.
Yes.
Big stakes to set this up. And I think it sets up a really compelling final. I feel Tsuji needs to win this match, but I can see Zach winning it as well. And I think that's the dynamic you want for any G1 final. Tsuji enters the ring. And he's got his fedora, his yellow Jean Blaster shirt. I mean, this guy just looks like a million bucks. And the two shake hands. And when they shake hands, the crowd's like, oh, my God. They just thought this handshake was the greatest thing. And Zach, instead of doing a big post-match speech, he's leaving that for tomorrow. He just goes into the crowd and in Japanese says he will see them tomorrow. And in the back, he gives this more extended interview where he says if he could beat Takagi, then no one could beat him in the rest of this tournament. I'm a tournament wrestler. I have one last tournament to check off the list, and it's the biggest tournament in all of wrestling. Everyone is focused on who isn't here any longer, New Japan. They're forgetting about the one guy who is here. 2024 isn't the year of the dragon. It's the year of the fucking saber. I mean, just an arrow to the heart of WH Park, I think, with that line at the end. Zach was awesome. This was a tremendous match. These last two matches, I mean, like how you could not be invested in this final. It was just two excellent, excellent semifinal matches, I thought.
What I like about it is that the final is not a safe pick. Like, you know, if you want to go with a safe pick, you would put Takagi in there. You would put, not given that he had a good tournament or anything, you would put Naito in there because, you know, you could sell the tickets based on who's in the ring, not necessarily the match they're going to have. I do like that it is two people who have never won the tournament. It's, you know, again, it's the, are we going to have an all LIJ potentially in the Tokyo Dome? Or is my thing, you know, being the TMDK pom-pom shaker in the post-wrestling family is the, Zach, you can't be called the front man of a faction if you're not actually standing at the front of anything. Like they have a great group dynamic and he does win a lot, but if he can't win when it comes to winning the big one, what's the point? So yes, I'm probably going to be very outnumbered as to who's going to win tomorrow, but I'm still pulling for Zach.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Okay, I'm going to play over-under with you. So last year's attendance for the final night with Naito beating Okada, 8,283 at Sumo Hall. Over-under on Sunday.
It'll be under because Okada's not there. As much as I would love to say that it would be on par, I don't think it would be.
I think it's going to be tough. And that's the whole balance of this, is that as much as Naito has been criticized in this tournament, if you were just booking this for business for the final night, you're putting Naito in that final, or at least at the final four in Sumo Hall. They're taking big risks that we're not building for 2024 and these last night. We're building for 2026, 2027.
Correct.
Like, that is how you try to, rebuild to where you were prior. And it takes sacrifice. And this year, this year's G1 would be evidence of that. Like, I've enjoyed this tournament a lot, but you've seen and some of the attendances, they should be very happy. They're up over similar attendances in the same building the year prior. But, you see from tonight's attendance, Yotasuji is not there yet. The hope is we're going to get him there. And you do have to go through that building process.
I think for me, I feel like Yotasuji, 2025 is the year he breaks out. Completely breaks out. Gets a single title. Is it the world heavyweight title? Who knows? He could easily him versus Finlay at the Dome for the white belt. Sure. I would not mind seeing Finlay's reign end there, provided they have a match with no tables akin to what they had today.
Let's quickly go over this. So once the G1 concludes, the next big show is at the end of the month on August 30th in Washington, D.C. with Capital Collision. And this card, just seeing all of these matches together, paired together. So look at this lineup. Mercedes Moné defending the strong women's title against Momo Watanabe. Hiromu Takahashi against Mustafa Ali. A three-way match for the strong a number one contenders match for the strong tag titles. Hiroshi Tanahashi and Tomohiro Ishii against Robbie Eagles and Bad Dude Tito against Zach Gibson and James Drake, the Grizzled Young Vets. Then Mikey Nichols and Shane Hayes defending the strong openweight tag titles against Hechicero and Virus from CMLL. Tom Lawler and Fred Rosser against Royce Isaacs and Jarrell Nelson. Zack Sabre Jr. against Teton. That's just random on the undercard here. Gabe Kidd defending the strong openweight title against Leo Rush, and then a pre-show match with Trish Adora against Hanako. This looks like a great card for a New Japan. This would be a great card anywhere, but yeah. I think this looks really strong following up on the G1.
It's a New Japan strong card. I am kind of sad that I won't be covering that event because I will be on vacation, but my only beef about it with Momo Watanabe challenging Mercedes Moné is that Momo's in Stardom's five-star Grand Prix. So you've already spoiled anyone thinking that Momo will advance out of league tournament play because the finals are on the 31st. And with time zones and everything else, Momo can't leave Japan, go wrestle in the United States and come back. Like even if she were to leave the night of the 30th, she'd arrive late on the 31st, which is after.
You need Hulk Hogan's understanding of time zones to make
that work. It's just one of those things where it's like, I would have rather for this particular one, because Mina Shirakawa isn't in the five-star because she's doing stuff with AEW, that Mina would be willing to challenge on this one. If they wanted to do Momo, you could do it in September or at the next U.S. show. It's just like, I have issues with them pulling somebody from the five-star Grand Prix to do a New Japan. I know, yes, they are under the New Japan umbrella right now, but there's plenty of girls in Stardom that weren't in the tournament. But I feel like Momo might kick Mercedes into next Tuesday because I'm excited for the match, but it just, the timing just doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, well, both the five-star Grand Prix and Noah's N1, they each have shows Saturday and Sunday this weekend. Also today, a bit of a surprise in All Japan, Yuma Aoyagi beating Yuma Anzai for the Triple Crown, which very surprising that they did this. I believe they had already been promoting Yuma Anzai and Kento Miyahara for September 1st. So bit of a surprise there. I thought they should have maybe gone a bit further with Anzai.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to just get your thought on before we close out is Monday, Julia's final match in Marigold against Mai Sakurai. This will happen 5:30 a.m. Eastern on Wrestle Universe at Corcoran Hall. Julia's final match. Do you imagine a pretty emotional send-off here for Julia? And what do you see as like her landing spot in NXT and her and the transition that she'll be undergoing?
Well, if I am not mistaken, at the show, at the press conference earlier today, Marigold announced that, yes, while her last singles match is against Sakurai on Monday, on the 25th, they're going to have a send-off for Julia, where in stardom tradition, or, yes, you know, in Joshi graduation tradition, as many people who want to do it, they get 1 minute to try to pin Julia.
Oh, okay. So
her final like singles match will be in our like formal match will be on the 19th, but now on the 25th, I don't know why they're extending it all of a sudden, but
gotta get all that juice out of Julia before she leaves.
Lemon as hard as you can. But yeah, so I'm excited because, you know, as I've discussed on post Perez, Sakurai really came into her own when she joined Julia and Donna Del Mundo, and then her choosing to leave was a very big risk on her part to, you know, join in this new venture. But it'll be a very emotional send-off, I think. And also one that, given that Marigold is so new and that they've only been wrestling together as a company for several months, I think it'll still have emotional impact because it's a lot of people taking a lot of risk all at the same time. I would be curious to see if any surprise people show up. I don't know if they would have any like people from other companies or, you know, people that she wrestled with in different stages of her career within Japan. But yeah, I'm still waiting for that She's Official for NXT story to come out, because it's we all assume that's where she's going, but nothing. They play it really close to the vest. But yeah, I'm very excited to watch the show. And if you haven't watched Marigold, and you're curious about it, Wrestle Universe is probably the best $10 a month you're going to spend, because there's not just Marigold. You get Noah, TJ, Tokyo Joshi, Basara, and like all these other different companies.
Especially right now with the N1 going on. Like,
yes. If you're N1 curious, definitely hop on. And also Sendai Girls, because we love Mako Satomura in this house. But yes, it should be a good time.
Yes. Lots of tournaments going on. Karen is now, she goes from orientation to her homework as she is diving into all of this this catch up. But she will be back Sunday with Bruce Lord and WH Park to go through the final night of the G1, which not just has the finals, but usually a lot of storylines on the undercard of setting up your whole fall season as well. So we will see if they do any big angles on the undercard at Sumo Hall and what the attendance is. We will find out as we all have our magnifying glass on every last person to enter and pay for a ticket to the finals. But there you go. Enjoy the finals, hopefully with air conditioning in your viewing, right in your home of choice, however you're viewing this with AC. But Karen, I want to thank, it's always great to do shows with you. And
it's been a while. I've missed you.
it's been a while. This is I want to thank all the contributors we had on the post wrestling feed. I thought our coverage was really great this particular year. And we finally, you know, they talked about at the beginning of all the first time matchups in this year's G1, none bigger than the first time pairing of Karen Peterson and Kate from Montreal, which got rave reviews. The breakout stars of this year's G1 as the pairing. I'm not going to compare you to like Gabe Kidd and Jake Lee, because I see both of you as levels above.
Why, thank you. I appreciate that.
But Karen's back on Sunday, so check out all of that. And what other anything else you would like to mention? You've always got many things on the go.
This month's Dream Slam Monthly will not come out in August. It'll come out in September on the 7th. WH Park and I will be back together on the 5th to record post pro res to recap the month. I don't know what I'm doing New Japan wise for the rest of the year. I need to talk scheduling with my boss. And if those who follow my work at Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the current issue that is out, I am the feature interview with the writer. So if you want to learn some little trivia nuggets about me. I'm in the one that has the Mercedes Moné champ picture on the cover. That I'm in there. So my picture's with Tanahashi because he's my favorite. So that's about it. Like, I'm going on vacation. I don't want to talk about wrestling after the 22nd until I come back on the 3rd of September. There'll be no, I am in a wrestling blackout. So I will be oblivious to the world when I come back.
All right. Well, check out all of that. And you can also hear Karen every month on Post Pro Res, keeping WH Park in line. two of my favorite people to listen to. I just, it is tremendous, tremendous listening. But that's it for us. Thanks to everyone that checked out our G1 show today. This was a nice free sample of our coverage, and back postwrestlingcafe.com on Sunday with Karen, Bruce, and WH Park. Goodbye.